It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, I'll talk with photographer Stephanie Brunia about her project Thursday's Child, documenting the changes as her father ages. I'll talk with both Stephanie and her dad, Steve. But first, losing weight sounds so simple in mathematical terms. Burning more calories than you consume equals weight loss. But reality is so much more complicated. My first guests today are here to help us understand calorie counting, metabolic changes, and the latest research in the science of obesity. Dr. Alan Mark and Charles Brenner are the founding co-directors of the Obesity Research and Education Initiative at the University of Iowa. Dr. Alan Mark is a professor of internal medicine at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. Dr. Mark, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
And Charles Brenner is the Roy J. Carver Chair and Professor of Biochemistry and Professor of Internal Medicine at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. Charles Brenner, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
And I think most of us are aware of the TV show, The Biggest Loser. It's a weight loss contest. People compete to see who can lose the most weight through severe calorie restriction and intensive exercise. It makes for pretty gripping television, but it's also been a kind of gift to science. In the past year, in 2016, the results of a long-term study by the U.S. National Institute of Health were released following the weight loss and then subsequent gain of contestants on season 8 of the show. And that raises a lot of really interesting questions about metabolic changes and why weight loss is so hard to maintain. And Dr. Mark, I know that that is a particular specialty of yours. So in simple terms, when somebody loses a lot of weight, why is it so difficult to keep it off?
The body was equipped to defend against weight loss. And that makes maintenance of weight loss during dieting and exercise extremely difficult. This is true not only with the contestants in The Biggest Loser who lost huge amounts of weight and spent months exercising 6 or 7 hours a day and restricting their food intake, but it's also true of individuals who diet to lose modest amounts of weight. The regain of weight during dieting is been known for many years and is a major challenge. And this study by Kevin Hall at the NIH adds to our insight by indicating that it's related not just to a lack of willpower, not to a lack of discipline, but instead to biologic changes by which the body defends against weight loss. The body is not equipped to defend against weight gain, but is equipped to defend against weight loss.
Obviously, that was a much bigger problem during our evolution.
Yes.
the scarcity of resources was a much bigger problem than the overwhelming availability of resources, which is something that a lot of people obviously deal with today. In this study, in looking at these individuals who lost all of this weight and lost it so quickly, this gave scientists an opportunity to really look at their metabolic changes. And there were some really striking findings in that study about how an individual's metabolism changed dramatically through this process. I mean, what did we learn from that?
Well, we learned from that study and from other studies with more modest weight loss that there are hormonal changes that decrease resting metabolism and increase appetite and food craving, in particular decreases in leptin, which is a hormone that inhibits appetite and promotes metabolism, and increases in ghrelin, that is another hormone that increases appetite and decreases metabolism. So there are compensatory changes in the hormones and presumably other factors that are contributing to the weight regain. Weight maintenance is a greater challenge than is weight loss.
And the findings of the metabolic changes were really striking, finding that an individual would have the metabolism of someone who is much smaller and would have to severely restrict calories on a daily basis to be able just to maintain the
weight loss. So with weight loss, with normal dieting, the hormonal changes were thought perhaps to disappear after a while. But in fact, there's a study from New Zealand that shows that they persist for a year. And in the case of Danny Cahill on The Biggest Loser, the metabolic changes persisted even after he had regained weight.
It really shows us the extraordinary power of our body to adjust to famine in the fact that these people can survive on fewer calories than it seems like they should need on a daily basis. So that gives us some insight into something really beautiful that our body is doing, but it's become a liability for so many of us in first world countries.
Yes.
When the weight loss is so fast and furious, I mean, you mentioned again the severe calorie restriction, 6-7 hours a day of intensive exercise, which is a kind of routine that really nobody can keep up over a really long period of time, or at least they can't do it if they're doing anything else with their lives. Does that kind of intensive weight loss, does it have a greater impact on a person's metabolism than the kind of gradual weight loss that is usually recommended?
Well, this is so extreme that it's one of the first studies that indicates that with that magnitude of weight loss, the changes persist even after the individuals begin to regain weight. There are individuals who can lose more than 10% of their body weight. These individuals in The Biggest Loser lost upwards of 50% of their body weight, which is unrealistic in real life. There are individuals who can lose 10% of their body weight and maintain their weight loss over time. And the reasons for that are not entirely clear, maybe 20% of individuals, but they have several characteristics. They have a strict attention to their diet. They tend to eat the same thing for breakfast each day, same thing for lunch, same thing for dinner, and they often even weigh their foods. And they have an intensive exercise program. So regular exercise is not so important in losing weight as it is in preventing weight obesity and, more importantly, in preventing weight regain.
Interesting. When weight loss is slower, is there a better success rate at keeping the weight loss or the weight off?
That's been the prevailing view, but Proetta in New Zealand has had a study recently that suggested that that's not necessarily true.
That's very discouraging. Mm-hmm. So why it looks like any kind of weight loss is affecting the body in the same way?
It's probably not the diet itself that is the key. It is probably the weight loss, the decrease in fat tissue and other hormonal adjustments.
And Charles, let me let you jump in here as well. I know that you obviously study a lot of these similar topics.
I might pop in a couple of points. One is that there are responders and non-responders to any type of intervention. So there's individual differences that we don't fully understand. We all have a different genome, and we all interact with our environment in a different way. So that there are, as Dr. Mark said, some folks that are able to keep the weight off better than others. Some of that is behavioral. Some of that is genetic, and we don't fully understand that. Second thing that is important to think about is that fat is not just a substance. It's a cell type, and it's a tissue. And fat itself is both producing and responding to hormones that is involved in maintenance of body weight. And so it's a very pliable organ. It's absolutely an essential organ. You can't live without fat any more than you can live without a brain, a liver, a heart, or a pancreas. And So we're gaining understanding into the function of fat as a tissue that has a role in maintaining itself as well as maintaining our health.
You were saying earlier, Dr. Mark, that there was a thought that perhaps if that level of weight loss was maintained over a period of a year, the metabolic changes might not be as significant. Let me parse that a little bit. What do we know about how the body then continues to respond if weight loss is maintained?
The evidence is that the metabolic and hormonal and adjustments that promote weight regain do not disappear over time. I mean, one has to continue to fight these adaptations to maintain weight loss. So one thing I would add here is that one of the few good things has come out of the study of Danny Cahill and others in The Biggest Losers is the increasing recognition that obesity and the difficulty in losing weight and maintaining weight loss is not a matter of lack of willpower or discipline. The individual who is responsible for their obesity and their difficulty in maintaining weight loss.
So hopefully this can take away some of the stigma.
It is a chronic disease like high blood pressure and like high cholesterol. And both of those we thought at one time were due to behavioral characteristics. But this is a chronic disease. It's not a matter of lack of willpower or discipline.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking right now about some of the most recent findings in research about obesity. With me this hour are Charles Brenner and Dr. Alan Mark. They are the founding co-directors of the Obesity Research and Education Initiative at the University of Iowa. If you have questions for them, you're welcome to give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll continue in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in a few minutes, I'll talk with photographer Stephanie Brunia. Her latest project is called Thursday's Child, and she's been documenting the changes as her father ages. We'll also talk with her dad, Steve Brunia, as well. Right now, we're talking about the latest in the science of obesity. Charles Brenner and Dr. Alan Mark are here. They are the founding co-directors of the Obesity Research and Education Initiative at the University of Iowa. We've been talking so far about research that shows that extreme weight loss is incredibly difficult to maintain, and research that came out in the past year that demonstrates the really interesting and extreme metabolic changes that can take place in a person's body through a tremendous amount of weight loss. And Dr. Mark, before we move on from that subject, I want to ask you, because a lot of people who struggle with severe obesity do pursue a surgical option. They go with a bariatric surgery or another option. When someone loses an extreme amount of weight through that kind of process, is it also as difficult to maintain?
So before I answer the question, I might just remind our audience that it was Edward Mason, a professor emeritus of surgery at the University of Iowa, who discovered or developed, if you will, bariatric surgery in 1967. So there's a strong history and tradition of excellence in that field here. So interestingly, with bariatric surgery for severe obesity that's refractory to medical treatment, the magnitude of weight loss and the maintenance of weight loss with bariatric surgery tends to be greater. Now, for a long time, it was thought that bariatric surgery acted mainly by reducing the size of the stomach and diverting food from parts of the intestine. But it's now realized that the mechanisms of weight loss and maintenance of weight loss with bariatric surgery are much more complex and involve probably gut hormones, bile acids, and maybe even changes in the gut flora. So there's intensive research underway to try to determine why patients who undergo bariatric surgery maintain their weight loss and even tend to lose some of their craving for food, so that perhaps those clues could then lead to development of new therapies that are non-surgical.
And Charles, can you weigh in on that as well? I mean, the idea of needing to go through that kind of surgery to be able to maintain a tremendous weight loss, that's really daunting to a lot of people. From your observations, is that something that is a pathway that you'd recommend people take?
Well, it's an available option for people with pretty significant obesity. One thing that we're starting to think about is the regulation of healthy metabolism, and there's another sort of stream of research that came from the study of calorie restriction in animals. So calorie restriction in animals is a little bit different than what we're talking about with a severely obese human being out in the wild. So when we calorie restrict an animal, we're taking a regular lean. It could be a mouse, a rat, a monkey, a zebrafish. And we're reducing their food intake by, let's say, 20 or 30% without giving them a micronutrient imbalance. So we make sure that they have the right amount of minerals and vitamins. And what we find is that their health span and their lifespan can actually be extended by not eating as much food as they would on an ad libitum basis.
Right, so not eating as much as they would want to.
Right, right. So it turns out it's pretty remarkable in the sense that inbred animals that die typically of leukemia or kidney disease or heart disease all have an extension of their health span and their lifespan by calorie restriction. And so scientists have been trying to figure out what are the biological processes that are stimulated by calorie restriction. And you might have heard a few years ago that some folks thought that resveratrol, which is a polyphenolic compound in red wine, might be a stimulator of these pathways. It's actually been found that many of these pathways involve a metabolite called NAD, nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. We actually work on this molecule in our lab. And we found very significantly that in animal systems, we can boost metabolism and we can get mice to be resistant to weight gain on high-fat diet and resistant to diabetic complications and neurodegenerative conditions by boosting NAD metabolism. So there's some hope that we may be able to understand some of the normal metabolic processes that decline in aging and that we may be able to supplement in order to potentially improve human health.
So, of course, when one of these studies comes out that shows that, let's say, lab rats on a calorie-restricted diet live longer and are healthy for longer than their other lab rat cronies, people immediately want to say, oh, then humans should restrict their calories and we will live longer. Do you feel like there's evidence for that?
So there's a couple of things going on. One is calorie restriction, and the other is the possibility of boosting NAD. Very few human beings really want to do calorie restriction, and there's a complication that when we look in animal experiments, the animals are largely confined in cages and they don't actually exercise as much as they might otherwise. So it's sort of an imperfect model. What we can say this far about boosting NAD metabolism is that we know enough about the molecules to know that these molecules are safe in human beings, and we know that they work in multiple models of metabolic dysregulation in animals. So there are a number of human clinical trials going on with our compound, which is called nicotinamide riboside, as an agent to boost human metabolism and potentially allow people to resist weight gain and improve their physical function through life.
Now, in your studies, in the studies that are going on, how is that compound used?
Right. So I'll just take you back in time. Just 12 or 13 years ago, it was something that we discovered in the yeast system. And so it was a metabolite that we showed is a new NAD precursor vitamin. And in just 12 or 13 years, the intellectual property has been licensed. There's a trade name for this molecule called Niagen. And full disclosure, I consult for the company Chromadex that has developed it. And I'm a co-founder of a company called ProHealthSpan that sells Niagen as well. And so it's now been tested in human beings and shown to be safe. There are people out there that are using it to essentially sort of feel better or improve their wellness, but there's no medical claims that are being made right now because it just hasn't been tested rigorously in terms of diseases and conditions. So right now, NR, Niagen, is available over the counter. It's also available to a lot of animals in the laboratory. And in the fullness of time, we're hoping that it can be tested clinically and potentially be used by people that have obesity, which is now recognized as a condition by the American Medical Association.
Now, I want to back up a little bit. When we talk about calorie restriction and the effect that it may have on people's bodies, I also want to just use caution there because obviously there are people who restrict calories to the detriment of their bodies. There are people with very serious eating disorders where they just are not taking in enough calories to survive. But this sort of grew out of a middle ground.
Yes. And I would point out that in terms of our, you know, general advice for the listening audience, you started the hour out by saying energy intake, energy expenditure, calories in, calories expended. Those really are the two most important variables in our lifestyle. It's very important that we stay physically active, probably mentally active, and it's important that we watch what we eat. But we do age. We do have different genetics, and we are usually not as active as we like, and we might have some extra servings of carbohydrates and fries. And so if there are safe nutritional interventions, it could potentially improve human health. But no, we don't advocate, harsh calorie restriction. And people should really find the lifestyle that works for them.
We're talking about some of the latest information being discovered in the field of obesity research, weight loss research. With me this hour are Dr. Alan Mark and Charles Brenner, the founding co-directors of the Obesity Research and Education Initiative at the University of Iowa. And Charles, when people hear you talking about a compound that may be able to increase a person's metabolism. I mean, that's the magic bullet that people have been waiting for forever. Do you have any words of caution about getting overly excited about something like this?
Well, we're excited based upon what we see it do in the laboratory. And as you know, our resting metabolic rate is something that declines over time. And in fact, resting metabolic rate is precisely what is reduced in these folks that, you know, they won the Biggest Loser competition, and why did they regain their weight? Because the resting metabolic rate went down. So if we can maintain our resting metabolic rate over time, then it would be a pretty significant, component of human health. NR does that in model systems, and so we're, very much geared towards testing that in human populations.
What are the main questions that you have about it right now? I mean, you're testing it, but what are the questions you really need to answer before you know if this is something that's going to work for people?
Part of what we do is we try to figure out what are the targets and the tissues that boosting NAD metabolism with NR activates. So there are potential targets in the brain, muscle, liver, pancreas, fat. All of the major research questions in obesity, questions of how different tissues coordinate whole body metabolism are relevant to the NAD research that we're doing now. But ultimately, we want to understand how the resting metabolic rate declines, how we can maintain muscle mass and function over our aging, and to see whether there are safe nutritional interventions that allow us to do that.
We do have some questions that people want to get your feedback on, Dr. Mark, and Charles Brenner here with me today. Here's an email from Julie. She said, I had the gastric sleeve done about a year and a half ago, and I've lost about 100 pounds. I still have 50 to go. Any feedback on that kind of weight loss surgery? We were talking about bariatric surgery earlier. The gastric sleeve is another very common surgery performed.
It has become probably the most common vertical sleeve gastrectomy has become probably the most common form of bariatric surgery now. The classic form of bariatric surgery is gastric bypass, Roux-en-Y. Lap band, which was another popular form for some time, has fallen substantially out of favor and is not performed frequently anymore. One of the things I would say about bariatric surgery that I didn't mention earlier is that the risk and complications of bariatric surgery have decreased dramatically in the past 15 years with minimally invasive or laparoscopic surgery. So it's still not something to be undertaken lightly, but it is, for severe obesity in a large group of individuals, the only proven effective treatment for severe obesity.
And both of you were mentioning earlier the fact that obesity is a disease and it's something that humans struggle with. And that's a message that I realize not everybody fully accepts. This is an email from David. He said, if obesity is a disease and not behavioral, why did humans go until the 1950s until the obesity epidemic began?
Well, there are obviously environmental factors in the last 50 years and increasingly sedentary lifestyles and increasing availability of dense, relatively inexpensive foodstuffs. One of the things I would say about the obesity epidemic is the question of why some individuals become obese in this environment and other individuals do not. There are very strong genetic contributions. So if individuals are overfed by a given amount of, let's say, 1,000 kilocalories a day for 6 or 8 weeks, the increase in body weight among those individuals may vary by as much as tenfold, and that's substantially genetic. Identical twins who share all the same genes tend to have the same body weight, the same distribution of body weight, and that persists over 25 years, even if they're reared apart.
Is there a point in our lives, obviously we go through metabolic changes just naturally as we age, is there a point in our lives that we are most at risk to becoming obese?
I think there's evidence now that childhood obesity is a profound predictor of adult obesity. You know, part of it relates to the set point problem, that fat tends to defend fat. And but as we age, I think there's a cumulative risk of weight gain as well.
We have this email from Jerry. She says, I follow Healthy at Every Size, which puts emphasis on doing what I can to be healthy rather than worrying much about weight, strengthening exercises, good food choices, taking credit for even minor exercise to help myself get going and moving. It's removed the guilt, shame, and desperate search for purchased magic. I'm much happier and healthier, and I haven't wasted a bunch of money, so I can more easily afford better food. I see both of you nodding your heads. I mean, we have only about a minute and a half left. Weight loss is something that so many people struggle with. With all that you're learning, what are some basic words of wisdom that you would share with somebody?
That was a very sensible email.
All right. Any other words of wisdom, Dr. Mark?
Well, I applaud that. And I think from adolescence on, trying to lead a sensible diet and maintain exercise is a good recommendation.
And do you recommend that people track their calories? Do you recommend that people track their calories or, you know, keep track of calories on a daily basis, something that has become so popular and easy with your handheld devices?
I personally don't.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for being here today. Dr. Alan Mark is professor of internal medicine at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. Charles Brenner is the Roy J. Carver Chair and professor of biochemistry and professor of internal medicine at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. They are the founding co-directors of the Obesity Research and Education Initiative at the University of Iowa. Coming up in just a moment, Thursday's Child. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.